Good morning. It's Drive Time, a show about anything automotive. Co-hosted by automotive industry veterans Tom Cheddar, Desmond Creighton, and Ken Freund. Tom's a popular speaker, consultant, trainer, and writer for the automotive industry. He's owned a chain of award-winning transmission shops and is the recipient of the industry's Lifetime Achievement Award. Desmond has over 30 years as a master technician, and he's the owner of Prescott Valley Transmissions, serving the Quad Cities area for 14 years. Ken's career spans four decades as a vehicle tester, master technician, technical writer, and more. So sit back and relax as we talk about anything automotive. It's Drive Time.
I can't wait to get on the road again.
Welcome to the only automotive talk show in the Quad Cities area. I'm Tom Cheddar, and I'm joining me this week in the studio are my sidekicks, Desmond Creighton, the owner of Prescott Valley Transmissions, along with our resident automotive and motorcycle guru, Ken Freund. How are you guys today?
Doing well.
Just great.
Great. I'm glad to hear that. And guys, we're sitting here at our new time slot, 10 a.m. So at 10 a.m. every Saturday, I feel like we got a promotion. What do you think about that, guys?
I love it. I love it. I'm so thankful.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Folks, we normally don't take live calls during our shows, but you can ask questions or make comments on our website, drivetimeaz.com. That's drivetimeaz.com. We answer all your messages via email. But if yours is picked as the question of the week, we'll discuss it on the air, and you'll win a prize package valued at $225. By the way, you can also win a $225 prize package by just sending us your favorite car or motorcycle song, along with a funny or a sentimental reason why it's your favorite. So while you're thinking about it, go to drivetimeaz.com. That's drivetimeaz.com. Guys, can you believe it's already midway through August? Pretty incredible. And we've got a very special show coming up on August 19th. Our lady listeners asked us to talk about auto care from the female perspective. So on August 19th, again, 10 o'clock, August 19th, the entire show is going to be co-hosted by a panel of ladies from the automotive field. Here's a quick rundown on the panel. Our show host will be Marilyn Mott. She's the Director of Community Outreach for the BBB. And she's going to be joined by Susie Ingram from Bennett Oil, Shannon Creighton. Yes, Desmond, that's your wife, Shannon. And she's going to be here from Prescott Valley Transmissions. And speaking of wives, Angel Gomez, Louie's wife from Prescott Tire Pros, will be here as well. Tammy Gage with O'Reilly Auto Parts. She's in the wholesale department at O'Reilly. And all the way from Broken Arrow, Oklahoma, Tiffany Sherrato, the founder of an organization called Amazing Women in Automotive, will be here. And I think it's going to be a great panel, Desmond. What do you think?
Absolutely. These are all superstar ladies from the industry. I can't wait to hear it.
Yeah, and you were the one that suggested it because Shannon kept hearing.
Yeah, she wants that people want to hear about from the ladies' perspectives. And
right. Also, guys, I want to take a minute before we dive into this week's show to thank our sponsors. And we're so blessed. We have sponsors we can endorse, not just promote. We've got Prescott Tire Pros and Automotive Service. They're your hometown favorite for tires and auto care. All new again, paintless dent repair makes hail damage and other dents and dings disappear, or it's free. And Five Star Cars offers internet selection and prices along with friendly hometown values. Bennett Oil's been the Quad Cities petroleum leader since 1938. Guys, that's 85 years. Next month, they're having a big celebration for their 85th anniversary. For a nutritious pick-me-up, go to Third Shot Coffee and Acai at the Gateway Mall, or get juiced up at the Tropical Smoothie Cafe in Prescott Valley in front of the hospital. Go to drivetimeaz.com and click on any sponsor's logo, and you'll be transported directly to their website. And while you're on the website, look at Ken's picture and click on the links under it for links to car shows and motorcycle roads, rides, and events. You'll also find links to podcasts for our previous shows, so you and your friends never need to miss an episode. Again, that website is drivetimeaz.com. So Des is here every week. He's the kind of the lead sponsor of the whole deal, the co-host that's here every week, and he owns Prescott Valley Transmissions, where they're known for as the hassle-free zone for car repairs. But Des just got back from a trip to Nashville. What was that trip like, Des?
It was amazing. I love Nashville. It's a beautiful area. The weather was kind of muggy, but yeah, we went back for conference, a coaching company, to help us, you know, learn better how to serve our customers better.
And the name of that company is
Shop Fix Academy.
Shop Fix Academy. And is it like an academy or more like a boot camp?
more like a boot camp. You know, they really teach, it's all about customer service. Take care of your customers, take care of your employees, and the rest kind of falls in place. Yeah, I love them.
You know, we talk all the time about customer service and what's called the customer service chain. So it's kind of a progression. Mm-hmm. And how you treat your employees, if you think of your employees as your first frontline customer, the way you treat them is the way they're going to treat your customers. And I think you treat your guys great.
I'm thankful to hear that. Thank you, Tom. We try hard, and we do. We think of our guys. They're an extension of the community. They're an example of our community. So everything we try to do, we're a small town, family values. So we try to make sure that we treat our guys the same. They're family. They need to, one of our guys has some sick children, so he's missing some time here and there right now to take his kids to specialists, and with a smile on her face, and here you go, go have that freedom to go take care of what's important. Mm-hmm. We just had one of our guys had surgery while we were gone. So three people missing from the shop last week. It was a rough week.
Right. But, you know, they all pick up for one another.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And that's part of being a good team. I know everybody's had the experience of going into a small business or even a big business for that matter, and they don't get treated well. And you can almost bet on the fact that that employee is not happy about their job. They're mistreating employees. Excuse me. They're mistreating customers because they feel mistreated themselves. And one other thing you do nice, I think, is every Friday you close for 2 hours. Yep. And you all have a barbecue together.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, it's we do a lunch and learn. We barbecue, we'll cater in lunch, whatever. Somebody from the team will always have a subject to discuss. But we like spending that quality time together. A couple hours, it's not the big deal, but it sure keeps the team bond strong. And you know, we got to stay focused on the same thing. We serve our customers, and how can we do that better? We discuss that every single Friday, 12 to 2.
And I like the way you look at things, too, that you found out one of your guys has a car that's a show car that he's really particularly proud of and yep. spends a lot of time working on it.
Yep.
And tell the folks what you did for him.
So we sponsor his car. We pay for all of his entrance into the car shows, whatever car shows he wants to go to. We help him do some repairs. Right now we're getting ready to rebuild his differential for him. He bought one off the internet, but didn't work quite right.
So, Des, I have something I want to ask you about, and then that's going to lead me to another question. But did anything exciting happen on your drive back and forth to Nashville?
We did run into a pretty big rainstorm coming out of Nashville, and that thing went on for like 3 or 4 hours. At 80 miles an hour, that was a big storm. Other than that, just hot and muggy. Oh, my goodness, back east is muggy.
So do you want to take a minute? You just made that trip. And yep. you're a drive-through type of guy. You just stop at a hotel to sleep long enough to get back on the road, right?
Yep.
So how would you, or what would you say customers could do to prepare their car for a road trip?
Absolutely. So you need to get it into a shop and have it looked over, have a thorough inspection done, check your tires, check your brakes, service all your fluids, really get an idea of the health of your vehicle. An example, before we took my wife's car to Tennessee, we brought it in, we did an oil change, we serviced the transmission. My guys went through the car front to back, top to bottom, rotated the tires. And
this is probably out of cycle. You probably weren't quite due for all those services yet.
I wasn't due for any of it, but I don't want to take a chance. I mean, there's nothing worse than being broke down on a trip, and you're at the mercy of whatever shop you can find, mm-hmm. and hopefully they're reputable, hopefully they're honest. I would rather know before I go.
You know, I have a couple of friends that won't even go on a road trip in their own car. they rent a car. That way, if something goes wrong, they just call the rental car agency.
Give me another one.
So
you know, it's funny you say that. My truck has 150,000 miles on it. I would not take it across country. Not that it's a bad truck, but my wife's car only has 40,000. Why risk anything?
Yeah, I guess that's true. Although cars today go on and go, yeah, as long as you service them.
Absolutely. It's nothing for today's cars to do 200,000 miles without breaking a sweat.
As long as they're serviced.
As long as they're serviced.
The lubricants are that good, right?
Absolutely.
And the engineering. So you mentioned bad weather coming out of Nashville. Was there any hail?
No hail.
Well, we had hail here while you were gone. I want you to know. I was over at All New Again Paintless Dent Repair when a hailstorm came through. You know, right here around the studio by Costco,
yep.
Up by the Gateway Mall, it's kind of a convergence zone for hail. Huh. Also out there by Pronghorn Ranch on the north end of Prescott Valley, they tend to accumulate hail out there too. But at any rate, they got like 12 calls while I was there from the hailstorm that occurred that morning.
Wow.
And so they were all jammed up. In fact, they were supposed to be on the show today, and they're just so backed up, they couldn't even spare one of the guys to come here to be on the show.
I believe that. You know, it's funny that you're bringing this up and the hail damage. I just actually got my truck back from them. They had my truck while I was gone to Tennessee fixing some dents, and they did amazing. I couldn't even tell where the dents were, and one of them was pretty significant. I thought I was going to have body work done.
Well, they are a group of great guys.
Absolutely.
Bruce, Brandon, Matt, and Chris call themselves the crew all over there at All New Again Paintless Dent Repair. Let me tell you, these guys are magicians when it comes to making dents literally disappear. When I say disappear, I mean just that. They're invisible. The beauty of paintless dent repair is that your car's original paint remains intact, so the integrity of the finish is preserved. By the way, they'll tell you right up front if your damage is right for paintless dent repair. They never charge you for estimates, and there's no appointment needed. You can even send them a picture of your dent, and they'll give you their opinion right over the phone. Your satisfaction's guaranteed. Even if they try to fix it and can't make it perfect, they don't charge you. I came up with this slogan for them. Results you can't see or it's free. They loved it, they use it, and they mean it. Here's an alert for you. Hail season is here, and hailstorms attract hail chasers. As the name implies, these outfits travel around the country chasing hailstorms. They pop up tents and signs on every corner, and the sign says, "We fix hail damage." The problem is, they blow out of town as fast as the hailstorm blew in. Once they're gone, what are you going to do if something goes wrong with their work? These guys are tricky, too. They'll get burner cell phones and local numbers so you think they're hometowners. Don't fall victim to these gypsy-style operators. I was over at All New Again recently and saw an example of the kind of work done by some of these hail chasers last season. Believe me, it wasn't a pretty sight. The poor owner needs to have it all done over. So when it comes to paintless dent repair, take it to All New Again. They've been in business for 2 decades, and they're here to stay. They're located at 8000 East Long Mesa Drive over in Prescott Valley. Contact All New Again Paintless Dent Repair by going to the DriveTimeAZ.com website and clicking on All New Again. It will take you straight to their website and tell them DriveTime sent you. Well, guys, it's time for me to introduce our special guest. I'm going to leave most of the introduction to my good buddy here, Ken, but I can't resist. I just have to say this is Don Petty from the Petty Racing family.
Wow.
And what an honor to have you here today, Don. Take it away, Ken.
Thank you, Tom. I'm honored again to have Don here and to have him as a friend. I've known him for several years now, and I was kind of surprised that the Petty clan let you escape this far away from the home turf. But anyway, here you are, and you've got a very interesting story to tell, a lot of stories to tell. And I think a lot of people would be interested to hear from you about the early days, kind of like right after World War II, and how your family, I understand your first cousin of Richard Petty, and of course that kind of partly defines you, but it's not a bad thing to have, I'll tell you. I'd be proud of it. And but you've done a lot of stuff on your own, including airplanes, and you're a tool and die maker and an aircraft mechanic, and all sorts of interesting things. And you restore cars yourself. You don't do a checkbook restoration. You're in there busting knuckles all the time. You have I've seen a salvage yard. You have like a little salvage yard down in Phoenix where you have a bunch of old cars, mostly Chrysler products. And you've got a pretty vast collection of cars that you showed me. So what would you like to start with?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me. And I didn't actually get away. I'm sort of the black sheep of the family. I've been in Arizona since 1964, so I sort of run away from home. Oh. So I was involved with NASCAR from the inception, prior to the inception, and until about the mid-60s. So all of my knowledge is from the early days of NASCAR, so to speak.
I wish we could show pictures. Don, you were showing me some early family pictures. Let's talk about that time leading up to when they first got involved.
Yeah, everybody thinks that because you're in NASCAR, you've always been wealthy and famous. That's far from the real case. In the early days, in the late 40s after World War II, most all families had a pretty rough life. There wasn't a lot of affluence in those days. And I remember growing up with Richard and Maurice. They lived in Randleman in a three-room tar paper shack.
Wow. Oh.
So
what state was that?
North Carolina.
In North
that
Carolina.
Was Randleman, North Carolina, where they are still there.
Okay.
But at any rate, when we were kids, we'd go and play around the house in the woods and so forth. To get started into NASCAR, actually, there was no such thing as an organization for racing in those days. After World War II, there were a lot of promoters that were promoting jalopy-type races around horse farms or fairgrounds, that sort of thing.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Were these just stock cars that have maybe
most of them were like 30s model coupes where they'd put a bigger engine in and so forth. And there was no organization. The promoters, they'd put on a race and everybody would show up with their cars they'd, you know, produced.
So there are no restrictions or rules probably in there about what you could do to the car.
Not very many at all. So a lot of times the promoter would take off with the money at the end of the race. And nobody even got paid. So,
wow.
So beginning in 1948, Bill France, who was one of the type guys I'm discussing, they decided that they needed to have some organization and have a national champion, so to speak. So they developed a point system so that when sanctioned races were held, according to where you finish, you get so many points. And that was pretty much the inception of NASCAR. What most people don't understand, back in those days, the cars were right off of the street. They were not modified cars. They had to be strictly stock.
Wow.
And, in fact, the acronym
for the term stock car racing.
That's what NASCAR stands for. It's National Association for Stock Car Automobile Racing.
Wow.
And if you modify the cars, you became disqualified even if you won the race. So that was the inception and the pretense of having the organization. Well, as far as the Petties are concerned, Lee, he was making a living doing farming and hauling gravel with dump trucks and that sort of thing. My dad had a public garage where he maintained cars, and he was much more mechanical, had more mechanical ability. Lee had very little, actually, in the early days. Mm-hmm. So all of the cars in the early days were actually built at my dad's garage in Greensboro, North Carolina. And this was from 1949 up till 53, 54, where they finally got into a pin battle between each other and split the sheets and went their separate ways.
Did your dad go with a team of his own?
Well, he actually raced until 1962.
Okay.
And back in 59 through the early 60s, we had a convertible division of NASCAR. This is a little something most people are not aware of, but there was a division that we raced convertibles.
No kidding.
So my dad, concentrated on the convertible division, and actually he won the championship every year that they had the convertible division. And in 1957 and 58, Bob Wilburn was his best driver. He had seven different cars, so we had a variety of drivers. But Bob won the championship for him, and the top 10 cars in the point standings, seven out of the 10 were my dad's cars.
So I understand that the Oldsmobile Rocket 88 was the hot ticket back in
those
days.
Rocket, the Oldsmobiles were one of the better cars in the 50s up to 59. In fact, Lee won the Daytona race in a 59 Olds, the first race that was held on the big track that we run on today. And the race was so close, he won it by about a foot. And during the after the race, they actually gave the race to a Thunderbird, which was second place, really. But Lee had won the race by 1 foot. And they had no cameras in those days at the finish line. So
it was a vote.
About a week later, they had some photographs that individuals had taken, and they saw that Lee had actually won the race. So he always made the joke that Beauchamp got to kiss the beauty queen, but he got the money.
Back then, you had to wait for the film to get developed, and then you get the pictures back. And
there was no official footage at all. It was just photographs of people had taken.
Yeah, but still, that's why it took a week, probably.
So you can bet your boots actually that they had a camera at the finish line.
Yeah.
So those were some of the early days, but the racing in those days, most of the teams were family-owned or individually-owned. We didn't have organizations until the late 60s when P. Lorillard, the tobacco company in Winston-Salem, actually started sponsoring the racing. And that's when the big money came in, and it's when all of the teams that we have today were developed. NASCAR is not even remotely like it was in the beginning.
So, well, they're certainly modified.
Well, there are no real cars today. No. They're all constructed cars.
Yeah, they're just shells.
Yeah. But at any rate, I wanted to talk about the earlier days because most people don't have a clue the way NASCAR actually started. There's always the idea that it was all bootleggers that were running their cars. Well, a lot of the cars were bootleggers. There's no doubt about that. In fact, one of my dad's attributes, he was the primary builder of cars to haul liquor in the state of North Carolina because he was very, very good at it. I was talking to Ken earlier today. Most people that they wanted to have a car to haul liquor in, their favorite car was a 44. Well, that was probably the worst car you could ever get to build one. And they would stuff big engines in them. They would load cases of liquor in the trunk of the car. So the revenueers would simply sit beside the byways and highways at 2 o'clock in the morning. They hear a 44 come in with a loud engine and the rear of the car dragging the ground. Say, well, there he is, and he's loaded. My dad built cars that looked like family cars. He two-toned them, made them sit level. He put a tank over the axle so the load would make the car sit level. He would tell people that bought these cars to have their drivers wear hats and ties and shirts. And he would two-tone the cars, make them look like a family cars, and they ran quiet. So when the revenueers would sit beside the road and they'd see this car coming, they'd pay no attention to it.
Just wave them
through. Some guy going home from work. But the 44 came along rumbling with the back dragging. Well, they knew who he was.
So the bootleggers that we see in the movies are the ones that had the hot cars, and the ones making money were the ones that looked like a family man.
That's exactly right. Well, none of the people that my dad bought cars from ever got jumped by chased by the revenueers. Never. Even though the cars were highly capable, they had Cadillac or Chrysler engines in them and so forth, so they were fast cars. So this is where he got a lot of his ability to build race cars. Had it not been for him and his ability to build these cars, there would have probably never been a family racing team in the Petty family. But at any rate, in 48, I believe it was, he had a 35 or 36 Plymouth that he had stuffed a big Chrysler engine into, and he was going to some of the local venues where these promoters had their races, entering the races.
You're saying he. Do you mean Richard or your dad? Your dad,
okay. My dad. And in 49, when they had the first race at Charlotte, North Carolina, the first sanctioned race with NASCAR, they heard about it. Well, they didn't have a car to enter, but they had a friend that had a brand new 48 Buick Roadmaster sedan. So they borrowed the car, and told him they were going to the mountains in western North Carolina for a Sunday afternoon picnic. Instead, we all went over to Charlotte, North Carolina. They taped the front end up, put a seatbelt in it, got an old motorcycle helmet, entered the car in the race. Well, the Buicks were pretty fast cars in those days, so about halfway through the race, Lee was doing the driving, and he actually was leading the race, but the bumper bolt on the right rear of the car kept rubbing the inside sidewall of the tire, and it finally blew out, and he turned it over right down the straightaway and totaled the car.
Quite a picnic.
Well, you couldn't buy new cars after World War II, and you had to get it under the table, pay under the table to get on a list. So they picked the car up the next day with one of my dad's dump trucks, took it back to the garage and dumped it off, and they told the owner that they had stopped at an overlook in the mountains and forgot to put it in the gear, and it rolled down the mountain.
Well,
about a month later, he was talking to some dude about what happened to his car. Well, this guy happened to be at the race. So he told him, he says, man, that's not what happened to your car. He says, Lee and Julie took that car over to Charlotte and put it in that race, and Lee turned it over and totaled it. Well, they finally got enough money to get him a car, I guess. And then my dad went down and bought a 49 Plymouth business coupe at the local Plymouth dealer. Flathead six-cylinder Plymouth, 98 horsepower. And that was their first race car.
98 horse race car.
98 horsepower.
Wow.
So at any rate, they did quite well with it throughout the 49 season, and they had acquired the point standing lead. They went up to, I believe it was Old Bridge, New Jersey, and won a race. Well, in those days, NASCAR took the heads off of the first three cars right after the race. So they were pulling the head from the Plymouth, and there were a bunch of spectator types standing around watching, which they could do in those days. And during the course of the teardown, there was a dude standing there that must have been a Dodge mechanic, because he looked over at the carburetor on the car, and my dad had put a Dodge truck carburetor on it. Well, he didn't think to pull the little brass tag off that had the carburetor number on it. So this dude sees the number and realizes that it was a Dodge truck carburetor. So he, out of the blue, pops up and says, that's a Dodge truck carburetor. Well, NASCAR checked it, and sure enough, it was a Dodge truck carburetor. So they took all of their points away from them mid-season.
Wow.
And they still finished second in the point standing after that.
That's a great story. Yeah. Don, I'm going to break away for a minute for one of our show segments. And we'll come back and let's pick up with some stories about the Richard Petty family and their racing team.
Okay.
That music means it's time to announce the winner of the Listener Question of the Week contest. To enter, just go to our website, drivetimeaz.com, and submit your car repair question or concern. If your entry is selected, you win. It's that simple. Congratulations to this week's winner. You get a $225 gift card package from our sponsors and one of our friends of the show, Third Shot Coffee and Acai, located in Gateway Mall next to Starting Point Church. My personal favorite is the Prescott Power Acai Bowl. It's protein-packed with all kinds of natural peanut butter and a whole bunch of other nutritious stuff. It's a perfect meal replacement. They also serve specialty coffees, breakfast, bakery goods. Let them know that you heard about them on the Drive Time Radio Show. This week's winner is Erica. Erica's question is perfect for all three of you guys to chime in on. She said, I've just moved here from Massachusetts, and I'm looking for a late model used SUV. I found a 2015 Jeep Grand Cherokee over at Five Star Cars, isn't that a coincidence, with 115,000 miles on it. It looks and it runs great, and I had it checked by my mechanic, who said it's in great shape. So here's Erica's questions. Are there any known chronic issues with the Jeep Grand Cherokees around the 2015 vintage?
Typically not. And Erica, it's kind of funny. What a coincidence. I'm the one that looked at your vehicle for you. I own the transmission shop. The 2015 Jeep Grand Cherokees are a pretty good little car. We haven't seen too many of them in the shop, maybe two or three, and that's saying something with how many cars we see a month.
Okay, so that you probably kind of answered the other question. Yep. Should she consider purchasing an extended warranty?
Absolutely. It's never a bad idea. transmissions, any major repair today, man, that could be financially crippling. An extended warranty is a good idea. And your last question, should you worry about it having more than 100,000 miles on it? And like I said earlier today, absolutely not. These newer cars are so well engineered. It's nothing for these cars to do 200,000 miles without breaking a sweat. The big thing, take care of them. Keep your service, keep your engine oil changed, yada, yada.
Speaking of oil changes and keeping cars running longer, good gasoline and lubricants work together to keep your car in tip-top shape. Check engine light on. You know, one possibility is running too low octane or low tier unbranded gas, or simply just some bad or contaminated gas. I want to tell you about the good folks at Bennett Oil. When it comes to quality, they never cut corners. They sell only top tier fuels with premium additive packages like Chevron and Texaco with Tekron, VP Racing Fuels and Lubricants, and a complete line of Citgo lubricants. From its humble beginning 85 years ago with Czech's Atlantic Richfield service right here in Prescott to the multi-state company it is today, Bennett Oil is known for top quality and customer-first service. If you have a business or a fleet of vehicles, Bennett Oil's Pacific Pride Commercial Fleet Card might be the answer for helping to control your fuel costs. By the way, you don't have to have a fleet. The folks at Bennett Oil can customize a program for you, too. There are thousands of locations nationally, and Bennett Oil has a 6 Pacific Pride commercial refueling sites for 24/7 fleet card access in the Quad Cities area. There's 3 in Prescott, 1 in Prescott Valley, 1 in Dewey, and 1 in Chino Valley. These sites boast DEF, or diesel exhaust fluid, right at the pump. They have higher volume fueling hoses and nozzles for faster service in larger volume vehicles. They have wide open lanes for large vehicles and RVs, and state-of-the-art fueling controls and fraud prevention. Bennett Oil is also a bulk fuel and petroleum product and equipment distributor serving retailers, repair shops, and commercial heavy-duty companies with off-site deliveries, even in the field. Non-business listener, everybody uses fuel, and Bennett Oil has 2 retail locations. The Texaco at 810 East Sheldon Street in Prescott also has a convenience store and an amazing full-service deli. Thumb Butte Pit Stop at 1451 West Gurley Street in Prescott also has a convenience store and another great deli. You can also buy your home heating fuel, kerosene, and shingle and fence oil for staining and maintaining your decks, fences, and shingles. Bennett Oil's been serving Arizona's petroleum needs since 1938. This year marks their 85th anniversary. Be sure to tell them you heard about them on Drive Time.
I think it's really fun to hear all these stories about the early days and the formative days of NASCAR and everything. And you've shared some things that I hope you'd tell our listeners about Richard Petty Racing and some maybe some backstories and stuff, because you've got all the dirt. So go ahead.
Yeah, I was there when it happened, as they say. But at any rate, those were pretty much the early days of NASCAR. Most of the cars that were raced were individually owned and driven. People would buy their cars and build them themselves and take them to the races and hopefully win enough money to eat on. There wasn't a lot of glory involved in those days. It was a sort of a business to earn a living. But at any rate, after the early days when it became more prevalent and there were more and more races and more money involved, beginning in the mid-50s, actually, the factories actually got into sponsoring cars, and they would pour a lot of money into the engineering. Howard Duntoff used to come down to the garage and bring us special equipment for the Chevrolets we were running, tell us how to work on the different aspects of the cars, how to set things up and so forth. But as far as building the cars, they were just individually done in a personal garage. Then later on, the National Safety Council got involved in late 58, and they were concerned about the speed of the cars and people were killing themselves on the highways and this sort of thing. So the factories pretty well had to pull out their sponsorship. The first car we ever had any sponsorship with was in 54. My dad I don't know how he pulled it off, but he wrangled a new Dodge car from Dodge. So they gave us the car, and I think it was $500 a month credit at the dealer for parts that we needed. Mm-hmm. So that was actually the first car that we had that had any kind of real sponsorship. Before that, it was a local service station or grocery store or whatever would put their name on the car.
Back then, you could almost buy an engine for $500, couldn't you?
Oh, yeah, you could.
Yeah.
You bet. Well, the 49 Plymouth my dad first bought was about a $1,600 car. So that gives you an idea. But the purse, too, you win a race, you made maybe $1,000 at best, which is real good money to win. Mm-hmm. So there was no big money involved in it. But in 1959, when Lee went to Daytona with the Oldsmobile, that was the closest race they ever had. And as best as I recall that year, the average speed for the 500-mile race at Daytona that year was faster than the Indianapolis race.
Wow.
So that's how fast the cars were actually getting.
Of course, that's pedal to the metal all the way around Daytona,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, wide open. They run wide open today, too. They sound like a Swiss watch running. Yeah. But at any rate, in the late 60s, P. Lord took over the sponsorship, and they started getting big money in there, and it has derived into what we see today, which is...
By they, you mean by now it's the Petty Racing team, right?
Yeah. But the way Richard got into it, Lee had – he was a national champion several times over in the early days. And in 1958, you had to be 21 in those days to drive. So in 1958, Richard and I both were the same age, so we were both qualified as far as age. And Lee let Richard take an old 58 Olds convertible that was left over to start his driving career. And that's pretty much the way he got started. So Lee was the star driver in those days and won considerably amount of the races. But in 1961, unfortunately, they both went over the wall at Daytona that year. And Lee was really hurt badly. And that pretty much ended his driving career. So Richard had to really take over the driving from that point on. And, of course, as we know... he won a whole lot of races.
He did okay, didn't he?
1967, we got the Hemi engine in 1964, and that's what really, really put the Petty family on the map as far as racing was concerned. In 1967, Richard ran every race that year. He didn't miss a single race, and he won 58% of all the races in 1967.
That's an accomplishment for to have 58% of the cars finish, or have a car finish 58%
exactly,
of the time,
but
right?
You stop and think about that. There's drivers on the NASCAR circuit today that still hasn't even won a race.
Yeah.
And he won 58% of all the races, 10 of them in a row.
Wow, that's got to be a record.
And he would have won the 11th one, but about two laps to go, he cut a tire, and he had to finish the race on a flat tire. He only finished second that year.
Speaking of tires, one of our sponsors is a tire shop. It's Prescott Tire Pros and Automotive Service. You know the old adage, it seems too good to be true, and it probably is? Prescott Tire Pros and Automotive Service turns that old adage upside down. Until I met Louie and Angel, the owners of Prescott Tire Pros, I had heard their commercials on the radio, and I wondered if they were just another company that overpromises and underdelivers. Well, the time came when I needed some help with my mysterious vibration and clicking noise in my car. I had it checked out by a couple other shops, but they couldn't or wouldn't figure it out. And then someone I trusted told me to take it to Louie. Boy, was I glad my friend recommended them. They spent nearly an hour checking, testing, getting to the bottom of my problem, and when it turned out to be something they don't work on, they told me who to take it to for repairs. The amazing thing is they wouldn't take a dime for figuring it out for me. They said, just remember us next time and tell your friends about us. Little did I know back then that I'd be hosting a radio show a few years later, but here I am and I'm telling you about Prescott Tire Pros and Automotive Service. I'm not telling you about them just because they're one of our sponsors. I've told a lot of my friends about them. I'm telling you about them because you can trust them. You know, they do a lot for the community, too. They're always helping veterans and other deserving individuals. They're simply fine, fine people, and I'm proud that they're one of the sponsors, and most of all, that they're my friends. By the way, they don't just sell tires. They're a full-service automotive center. If it's part of your vehicle, they most likely can service it, fix it, or replace it. And if it's something they don't work on, they'll tell you who you can trust to do it right. All their tires and repairs are covered nationwide with a written warranty that's second to none. The next time you need tires or anything automotive, do yourself a favor and take it to Prescott Tire Pros and Automotive Service. They're at 1635 Iron Springs Road next to Waters Garden Center. Or go to our show's website, drivetimeaz.com, and click on the Prescott Tire Pros logo. It'll take you straight to their website. So you were talking about Richard would have had 11 had he not blown a tire. I'm curious, when did tire companies start sponsoring cars, and when did they go to Special Tires?
Oh, way back in the 50s, we had Special Tires.
Oh, you did? Yeah, okay.
I remember some of the car tires we had were the Indy-type cars, and they ran on pavement, obviously. And these tires were half tread and half smooth.
I see.
Special racing tires. And when we started getting asphalt, we had to have those type tires. Before that, we just ran truck tires, usually.
Truck because it was thicker tread and, what were they, 8-ply?
Right. Yeah. On a side note on that, the first big race we had was at Darlington in 1950. And the car that won the race, actually was a 50 Plymouth, slowest car in the whole fleet, the whole race. He ran the whole race on the same set of tires because he ran truck tires.
Oh.
And he only had to stop twice for fuel. Well, the big cars, the Olds and Lincolns and Cadillacs and so forth, they were stopping every few laps for fuel and tires.
And tires took a while to change in those days, didn't they?
Oh, yeah. We'd jack them up in the pits like you would anywhere else. But at any rate, they ran out of tires because they were using all the tires they had. So they were actually going out into the infield and taking tires off of people's personal cars to finish the race on some of the bigger cars.
I'll
so
be darned.
The tire technology back then was obviously not very good. They were bias belt tires. Today we've got special tires for everything, and there's a half a pound difference in the air pressure. Well, then, you know, your tire will disintegrate, so to speak.
Wow, they're that it's built very, on that close of an
critical
edge. Huh?
So the pressure on the tires has to be compensated cold, and then when they start running, this is the reason when they change tires in the pits, sometimes it takes them a few laps to get the grip we need to run faster. The tires have to heat up. It's highly technical today.
Everything's so specialized now. So tell us a little bit about, I love the door slammers, the early cars where the doors actually opened and closed.
Oh, yeah.
They were real cars made out of real steel instead of plastic. And you had the Hemi era, and then it went into the wing car era. And that's one of my favorites. And the speeds of over 200 miles an hour, and it was incredible.
Right.
And in places like Talladega, they were hitting some incredible speeds.
They sure were.
And you had the Plymouths and you had the Dodges with the wings on the back of them. Tell us about that a little bit.
Well, those days, the speeds were getting really up there, 230 mile an hour speeds down the straightaways. And the first car that ran over 200 miles an hour was a Hemi Charger at Talladega. Ran 205 miles an hour, I believe, which was about like 230 down the straightaways. But at any rate, that was a period of time that the factories were experimenting with aerodynamics and this sort of thing. And Ford had a special car, and the 67 Plymouths that we were trying to run previously, they were like a brick compared to these aerodynamic cars. So the Dodge came out with the Daytona car, which was the wing car, so to speak. Well, Richard was trying to run the Roadrunner-type cars, which is a brick compared to those cars. So he told Chrysler, he says, I got to have a wing car. And they said, no, that's a Dodge deal. Plymouth's not going to have the wing car. So he said, well, I can't compete against that thing, even though I got the Hemi engines. He says, I'll go to Ford. Well, we've been running Chrysler since 1949. So they laughed at him and said, you won't go to Ford. He said, oh, yeah. So he went over to Ford in 69, and they gave him $1 million for a one-year contract and sponsored, paid everything, and let him keep what he won. But he didn't win but four or five races that year in the Fords. So in late 69, Chrysler comes back and says, man, we got to get you back in NASCAR, because he was their star driver for Chrysler. So he said, well, I told you last year I got to have a wing car. So in 1970, the Superbird Plymouth was constructed strictly to get Richard back into NASCAR.
And that actually became a model that they sold, too, right?
Oh, sure.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, they had to homologate them. They had to build a certain number of them, probably, I think it was
500. 500,
yeah.
And most of those cars were built with 440 engines, but yeah. There were a few of them built with the Hemi 4-speeds.
And they're worth a fortune now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Well, they go for millions at the auction.
I have a 69 426 Hemi Roadrunner convertible, which is one of three now.
I've seen it.
Yeah, I know.
Did it have a wing?
No, it's a Roadrunner.
Oh, Roadrunner. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. But at any rate, that was the reason the Superbird was ever built, just strictly. And it became a one-year car because the next year, Bill France, he had had enough of this, you know, aerodynamic stuff. And he says, okay, no more. You guys got to go back to a car that looks real, you know.
Kind of what Bill said was the rule of the road, right?
Well, Bill France, he formed NASCAR. And by the way, most people probably don't realize this, but NASCAR is solely owned by the France family.
Yeah, I think we had a guest on earlier this year, and I think he might have mentioned that. But yeah.
Most people think it's a big corporation, but it's a family-owned
company. Oh, okay. Yeah, I didn't know that. I just thought the France family founded it.
Yeah,
but Bill France, he was a good businessman, but his rule was, you need me worse than I need you. So if you didn't like what was happening, he'd say, well, take your football and go home, you know. Or to go home, I got the football. Mm-hmm. So that was his attitude throughout. And Brian France actually is the one that really got NASCAR nationally known like it is today. He was a much better businessman and understood what it took to grow NASCAR and to make it highly profitable, so to speak, for everybody.
It's probably the most recognized organization in the whole world, isn't
worldwide
it?
Just people that are not even car people or they know about NASCAR.
Yeah. So sure. You mentioned you own this Roadrunner.
Yes.
Do you have any other collector cars?
Oh, Lord. I have about 40 cars.
Oh, okay. What's your favorite?
Well, my favorite is a 60 Chrysler 300 letter car convertible with a French 4-speed transmission.
That's one of the big fins, right?
Right, and a ram-inducted engine. In 1960, Chrysler sent six of these cars to Daytona for speed runs, and they needed a standard shift transmission. They were all automatic cars. So they didn't have anything in their inventory. So Fassel Vega uses a Chrysler engine in their cars in France.
Oh.
And they had adapted the special 4-speed racing gearbox to their cars. So Chrysler just simply ordered 15 of the gearbox sets for the special cars they built. And there's only four of those cars left, two hardtops and two convertibles.
One's yours.
And I have both the hardtop and convertible.
Oh, congrats on that.
I have one of the actual cars from Daytona in 1960.
So, Ken, have you been out there to see his collection?
I have, yeah. Don actually has a place here in the Prescott area, and then he also has a place down in Phoenix, which is a bigger place.
Yeah.
And he has most of his cars down there. He kind of brings his favorites up here.
Yeah, I'll bring a couple a year. Right now, I don't know if you people ever saw the movie Christine or not.
Yeah.
Well, I am currently restoring a 57 Fury. And I sold the movie company three Furies for the movie. Back in those days, I had seven Furies, and they came along wanting to lease them. But I actually sold them.
So I didn't realize you needed more than one for the movie.
Oh, they tore a lot of those cars up.
Did they?
Yeah, it's normal.
I know many of our listeners have been waiting for the car show lowdown. You could say that Ken Freund is a car show junkie, but he's also into motorcycles. He's ridden motorcycles across six of the world's seven continents and lived to write about it. He's tested and evaluated motorcycles for virtually all of the major motorcycle manufacturers and then reviewed them in his articles in Rider Magazine and Roadrunner Magazine. Anyhow, Ken's been searching for the lowdown on upcoming events. So what's going on, Ken?
Yeah, We just had one of the biggest events of the year, the Watson Lake Car Show. I was out there, and for a change, we didn't have a rainstorm come through or anything like that. It was a great show. It's always hot there, but anyway, moving on, we've got today, Saturday, we've got a motorcycle swap meet, which is a rare event. It's over in Prescott Valley at Blue Collar Customs, 8859 East Valley Road, from 7:45 a.m. to 12:45 p.m. So if you hurry up, you can still catch it. Then there's the weekly bike and ATV night at Founding Fathers on Wednesdays at 5 to 8 p.m., 218 North Granite Street, Prescott. On Saturday also, this coming a week from now, the 19th, there'll be the annual Hope Fest. That's a big car show that's done around the Courthouse Square in downtown Prescott. That'll be starting at 9:45 a.m. and runs all day into the evening. That's quite a big event, and it's a good fundraiser. There's also, on August 19th, Saturday, there's a Redneck Roundup Demolition Derby and Motorcycle Barrel Race, which is a real hoot, and that's over at the Camp Verde Equestrian Center, 1495 East Hideout Arena Lane. There's also coming up the third Thursday of every month is a cruise in with the Prescott Antique Automobile Club. That's at Sprouts Shopping Center in the early evening in Prescott. There's one more the fourth Saturday, 9 a.m. to 11. There's a Prescott Cars and Coffee at the Gateway Mall, and that's organized by Third Shot Coffee.
One of our sponsors.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you can always get all the details and even maybe discover some more events that get added to the website by going to drivetimeaz.com and then click on the links under Ken's picture. Now, Ken, you mentioned the Watson Lake Car Show. I don't know whether they made it out there or not, but you know, Five Star Cars was going to have their giant Hummer out there at that show last weekend. I've been around the car business for over 40 years, and I've bought and sold a lot of cars. As the guy in the insurance ad says, I know a thing or two because I've seen a thing or two. And I know this about Five Star Cars. They're truly a premier used car dealership. Before I asked them to be one of our sponsors, I visited the dealership to see how they treated people. I was favorably impressed. The owner, Bruce Wallace, says they're a stress-free dealership, and he means it. Five Star Cars specializes in quality pre-owned cars, trucks, and SUVs. They keep their inventory fresh with new vehicles, constantly adding new inventory. But they won't just put any car on the lot. Every vehicle they sell goes through a comprehensive inspection process to make sure the vehicle meets their strict standards. Then they service, repair, test drive, and detail each vehicle, and they add a 30-day, 1,000-mile warranty just to prove they're providing the best pre-owned vehicles available. Plus, they won't sell a car unless they can confirm its history. In fact, they post the Carfax report on the window of every car on the lot. Trade-ins are always welcome. They'll also buy your used vehicle for cash. Let me tell you, selling your car to them makes it a lot easier than taking the risk of trying to do it yourself with all those weirdos out there trying to scam private party sellers. Five Star Cars owner Bruce Wallace says, I've been around this town a long time, and we do business like we're going to be here for a long time to come. I can't recall ever seeing a used car dealership with an A-plus accredited Better Business Bureau rating. And the customer reviews on their website validate that the BBB A-plus rating is deserved. So whether you're shopping, selling, or just want to talk cars, make sure you give Five Star Cars a call or do what I did. Drop by for a visit. Five Star Cars is in Prescott Valley at 8057 East Yavapai Road. Contact Five Star Cars by going to our show's website, drivetimeaz.com. Click on the Five Star Cars logo, and it'll take you straight to their website. Tell them Drive Time sent you.
Okay, Don, so after the wing car era, and that kind of died down, and then the cars really started to kind of all look the same, petty racing continued on. I understand that Richard just kind of finally retired from the whole thing, but tell us about all that.
Well, his retirement, after he had won 200 races, and President Reagan actually flew in to Daytona to present him with the trophy that race.
I remember that.
That was pretty much the end of the hoopla day era, you know, when everything was going great. And then Kyle had taken over some of the driving also back in the earlier days, and he did quite well. He later on, of course, turned into a personality. You see him on TV and so forth. And the only tragedy we ever had was Adam, which was Kyle's son. He was killed trialing one of the cars after he had actually won a race.
What track was that at?
Adam. That was Kyle's son.
No, what track?
That was, I believe, at one of the northeastern tracks. I forget which one it. But he was practicing or time trialing, and he got up into the what we call the marbles of residue from the tires, and
right.
The car spun around 180 degrees, and he slammed into the wall on the driver's side about 150 miles an hour. Mm. And, of course, the sudden stoppage you just can't take.
Right.
On a side note of that, we have a lot of safety equipment today. In the old days, all you had was a helmet and a seat belt.
They practically have a cage around them now, don't they?
Oh, yeah, the cages today, and they're all engineered to collapse and that sort of thing. It's really hard to get hurt in a car today. But most of the drivers in the early days that were really hurt bad or killed, it was a sudden stoppage that got them. And that's what happened to Adam when he slammed into the wall. But Kyle he took it quite hard, and that kind of took the wind out of his sails, so to speak. So
on a lighter note, Richard's known for his hat.
Yes.
And I understand there's a story attached to that, but I want to ask you a question leading into that.
Okay.
I played in a celebrity golf tournament with him a few years back. Mm-hmm. He was wearing the cowboy hat with all the feathers, and he had a cowboy outfit on and cowboy boots with golf spikes in them.
Yeah.
Is that accurate?
Well, that's pretty much the uniform of the day for him.
But tell us the hat story. I love that.
Well, back in the, late 70s maybe, I was, of course, in Phoenix, Arizona, and I used to fly back there frequently. So I flew my plane back for a little vacation, and I had a big cowboy hat on with the feather band around it. And I went down to the garage at Randleman to visit, and I walk in the door. He says, "Hey, boy, come here a minute. Let me see that hat."
So you guys were the same age, but he still called you boy.
Yeah, okay. Everybody's called boy. So at any rate, shortly thereafter, he started wearing the big cowboy hat. And also, he was being sponsored by Ray-Ban sunglasses in those days. And
But he's wearing your cowboy hat in the
so
beginning.
The next thing I know, he's wearing those big cowboy hats. So I kind of feel that I was instrumental in getting him into the cowboy hat era. Jim.
Don, it's been so good having you on. Ken, thanks for inviting your friend here, and thanks for interviewing him. You brought out some great stories. There's my musical reminder again. It's time to announce the winner of the Drive Time Song of the Week contest. This week's winner is George. And George says, "My initials are GTO. So naturally, my favorite song is Little GTO, first introduced by Ronnie and the Daytonas in 1964, but was later revived by the Beach Boys. He says, please play either version.
Little GTO, you're really looking fine. Three deuces and a four-speed and a 389. Listen to her tacking up now. Listen to her whine. See her on a road course or a quarter mile. This little modified Peloton has got plenty of style. She beats the gassers and the rail jobs. Really drive them wide. Come on and turn it on, wind it up, blow it out, GTO. Thank you.
gonna save all my money and buy a Geo. Get a helmet and a roll bar, and I'll be ready to go. Take it out to Pomona and let them know, yeah, yeah, that I'm the coolest thing around. Little buddy gonna shut you down.
Be sure to tune in again next week and tell your friends about our show at our new time, Saturdays and Sunday at 10 a.m. Don't forget to visit our website, drivetimeaz.com, for more information and podcasts of previous shows. And until next time, we want you to have a great week. It's going to be a great week to have.
It's Drive Time.